हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, page 95, chapter 6. The Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhasa. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Krishna possesses that form suitable for human pastimes to show the full capacity of his yoga maya. That form astonishes even the Lord of Vaikuntha. It is the pinnacle of auspicious qualities and enhances the beauty of his ornaments. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.12, right? Because we have to always remember is that the aspect of opulence in the way of means majesty, then it definitely gives a certain sense of awe and all these kind of things. But that element of relationship, of rasa, will be deeper in the human pastimes. Because if he's God, then he's great. Right? And so that will create a very full experience. But it won't have the same experience as that of the taste of a relationship as it will when it's human. Right? So it's just the way it'll work. You also come to deliver the people of future generations, O Lord, whose glances by being sung or heard purify everyone. Right? So the future generations means like us now. He performed these pastimes 5,000 years ago, but we're still hearing about them now. We're still being attracted by the wonderfulness of his pastimes now. So when he performs the pastimes, it's good for them and also for the future. Having accomplished everything you desired to do, you will now give up this world. This is what I guess. This is expressed by the word nunam, showing conjecture. But you've instructed us to bathe at Prabhas to nullify the curse of the Brahmins. Is bathing there more powerful than seeing you? How can the curse of the Brahmin have effect if you simply think this curse should not come to pass? This shows that you desire to disappear. Because though you are capable of nullifying the curse, you do not do so. Right? So Uddhava is very intelligent, so he sees everything that's going on. He knows what's happening. The others don't. But he figures it out. Otherwise, he's the Supreme Lord. He can nullify the curse. So he hasn't. That means he wants it to happen. Right? And they've gone to Prabhas to take the bath to purify themselves. But he's the most pure. So he sees there's something else that's happening here. The BBT purport states, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that immature conditioned souls think that Lord Krishna is an ordinary jiva soul, engaged in material activities, and was thus unable to protect his own dynasty from the curse of the Brahmanas. Uddhava's statement corrects such unfortunate persons. It is Lord Krishna himself who awarded pious living entities birth in Brahminical families. And then Lord Krishna further awarded them the potency to curse his dynasty. Right? So it's Krishna's arrangement. He comes to establish everything, and then having that done, then you have to go out. You know, the pastimes will wind up in some, amazing way. Srila Vishnu, Sri Uddhava continued, O Lord Keshava, my dear master, I cannot tolerate giving up your lotus feet even for a fraction of a moment. I urge you to take me along with you to your own abode. My dear Krishna, your pastimes are supremely auspicious for mankind and are intoxicating beverage for the ears. Tasting such pastimes, people forget their desires for other things. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Soul, and thus you are most dear to us. We are your devotees, and how can we possibly reject you or live without you even for a moment? Whether we are lying down, sitting, walking, standing, bathing, enjoying recreation, eating, or doing anything else, we are constantly engaged in your service. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, and ornaments that you have already enjoyed, by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. Yeah, so this is a famous shloka by Uddhava, like that. It's also, yes.
The introduction to the first canto in Prabhupada's first book that Prabhupada wrote, first canto, translation. This is the introduction, it's in the shloka.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's not Uddhava Gita yet.
No, but it's the preparation for it. You know, it's just like first canto is preparing for Sukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikrit. You know, why is it coming? So this is why it's going to come up. Okay, so this discussion. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, I pray in this way since I cannot give you up. I do not pray because of fear of Maya. If Maya attacks us, we will conquer Maya by becoming strong with these weapons of your remnants, not by Gyan or other processes. So he's going to conquer Maya by always thinking about Krishna, whatever he's doing, and always then being involved with those things connected to Krishna, his remnants, his garlands, his everything like that. So by that, he's going to conquer then the illusory energy. Sri Uddhava concluded, naked sages who seriously endeavor in spiritual practice, who have raised their semen upward, who are peaceful and sinless members of the renounced order, attain the spiritual abode called Brahman. O great yogi, we, on the other hand, though wandering in this world on the path of karma, will overcome insurmountable ignorance along with your devotees by talking about you while remembering and glorifying your deeds, words, movements, smiling glances, and amorous joking, which appears to be human. Footnote 43. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 46 to 49 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 12, titled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the book. And so as always, doing everything connected to Krishna, anything to remember Krishna, all those aspects. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, your great devotees do not seek to cross over Maya as a result of their bhakti. But we are not like those great devotees. How can we be so confident? Out of humility, Uddhava shows that he also desires to cross over Maya. Though we are servants in Dasya Ras, taking assistance of Sakya Ras, we do not desire to practice Gyan, even though you order us. We will cross Maya with your devotees, who have similar nature to us. We will not cross with naked sages. What is the method? Crossing the darkness of Maya is easy by the light from your Sudarshan Chakra in the form of remembering and glorifying your pastimes. Right, because that clears all obstacles. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated, one who acts to serve Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence, and words is a liberated person even within this material world. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-2-187. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikit, thus addressed, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Devaki, began to reply confidentially to his dear unalloyed servant, Uddhava. Conclusion. By incarnating within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna performed the highest welfare work for the entire universe by displaying his transcendental pastimes. Notice this is an interesting point. You'll see this in the standard in the Vedic literature. Is the opening many times is in the previous chapter. See, in modern writing, we put this at the beginning of the other one. But here it's actually conclude, because the other thing is there, so you're concluding that aspect and bringing it to the next, then the next one starts. Does that make sense? Yeah. The demigods can normally see such forms of the Lord as Upendra. However, although accustomed to seeing various Vishnu expansions of the Lord, the demigods were specifically eager to see the most beautiful form of the Lord as Krishna. Krishna perfectly reciprocated with them. Because of affection, he considered the withered garlands offered by them to be superior even to Lakshmi. Because what like we said, Lakshmi means wealth. But this is, they've given something in devotion. So that devotion is more valuable than wealth. that position of wealth. Does that make sense? So it's not meaning Lakshmi Devi herself and her service. It means that position of Lakshmi. The demigods praise the unique position of the Lord, who is not attached to any type of material sense gratification, but is controlled only by the prema of his devotees. The Lord's pure devotees are so attached to him that they cannot tolerate even a moment of separation from him. They aspire for association out of love, not out of fear from Maya. Right? So if we turn to Krishna, we tend to in the beginning because of fear of Maya. Right? But the devotees aren't afraid of Maya, as Uddhava was saying. But just by being absorbed in Krishna, then where's the Maya? Right? That, so it's with the association of the Lord's devotees, that's how we cross Maya. Not with all these great sages and sadhus and who are so renounced and everything. That's not. By incarnating within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna performed the highest welfare work for the entire universe by displaying his transcendental pastimes. Simply by hearing and chanting about these pastimes, pious persons in Kali Yuga can definitely cross over the ocean of material illusion. Peaceful members of the renounced order attain Brahmaloka after exhaustive and painful exertion, whereas the devotees of the Lord simply discuss Lord Krishna among themselves, chant and remember his various pastimes and instructions, and thus automatically cross beyond the insurmountable material energy. Because it isn't just mountable, it's one quarter of unlimited, right? So how is 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair going to get over that one? Right? But it's always by hearing and chanting about Krishna that brings us to the other side. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Dan Uddhava Gita, Section 1, 7 to 16. So Chapter 7, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava. Chapter 8, the story of Pingala. 9, detachment from all that is material. 10, the nature of fruitive activity. 11, the symptoms of conditioned and liberated entities. 12, beyond renunciation and knowledge. 13, the Hamsa avatar answers the questions of the sons of Brahma. 14, Lord Krishna explains the yoga system to Sri Uddhava. 15, Lord Krishna's description of mystic yoga perfections. Chapter 16, the Lord's opulence. So you see, here in instructing Uddhava, then so many different stories will be there and other things like that, just like we saw. Vasudeva asks a question, Narad Muni answers by talking about what he has heard from a discussion. No, Kumara's in between?
Kumara's also in another case.
Not this one. Okay, so then the story of Maharaj Nimi, right? And then Navayogendra. So it's a very standard kind of method. Chapter 7, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava. Pratigya. Those who are self-controlled and expert in the spiritual science of Shankya can directly see the Lord with all of his potencies. Chapter 7 summarizes questions and answers. Uddhava asks Sri Krishna question 11.12 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 11.7, 14 through 16. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, you alone award the results of yoga practice, and you are so kind that by your own influence you distribute the perfection of yoga to your devotee. Thus you are the supreme soul who is realized through yoga, and it is you who are the origin of all mystic power. For my supreme benefit, you have explain the procedure for giving up the material world through the process of sannyas, or renunciation. My dear Lord, O Supreme Soul, for those whose minds are attached to sense gratification, and especially for those bereft of devotion unto you, such renunciation of material enjoyment is most difficult to perform. That is my opinion. O my Lord, I myself am most foolish because my consciousness is merged in the material body and bodily relations, which are all manufactured by your illusory energy. Thus I am thinking, I am this body, and all of these relatives are mine. Therefore, my Lord, please instruct your poor servant. Please tell me how I can very easily carry out your instructions." Sri Krishna answers this question beginning with verse 19 and continuing through the next several chapters.
How many of the chapters comprise the Uddhava Gita from this index?
The whole thing, this is. This is part one of Uddhava Gita.
Part one.
So 7 through 16 is part one, and then it goes on more. I'm not sure up to what chapter. You know?
89.
29. Okay, so it goes to 29. Yeah. So, how to, means those who are very attached to material energy, how they're going to cross. Because for them to be very renounced and all that, follow these very strict things of the sannyas order and all these things, like we see these great sages, and they just go into meditation, they don't worry about anything. Very difficult. So they're not so attached, so they can do that. So how does people who are attached, how do they deal? Right? Does that make sense? Plus, you see, it's from the previous chapter that Uddha is pointing out that even though they are very renounced and everything, the effect they get is actually less than what the devotees who are functioning within the realm of karma are getting from their attachment to Krishna. So their focus is they're detached from Maya, but the devotees, they're attached to Krishna. It doesn't mean that they aren't wary of Maya, but the point is if you're doing something for Krishna, where's the Maya? Right. Maharaj Yadu asked the Avadhuta Brahmana, question 1113 of Srimad Bhagavatam, from 26 and 30. Chapter 7, 26 and 30. Sri Yadu said, O Brahmana, I see that you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, and yet you have acquired a most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence, and why are you traveling freely throughout the world behaving as if you were a child? O Brahmana, we see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment, and that you are traveling alone, without any companions or family members. Therefore, because we are sincerely inquiring from you, please tell us the cause of the great ecstasy you are feeling within yourself. Right? So in other words, Krishna consciousness is beyond all these other things. It's not that the aspects of detachment that aren't used. What we have to learn is that that's not what causes bhakti. Right? It's not that, oh, so we don't need to be renounced. Right? That one we'll get. Oh, you know, but the thing is that it's just they're doing activities, they connect it to Krishna. So then we don't say, oh, that aspect of karma we don't need either. No, we'll keep the karma that we're using for Krishna, but the detachment, that we'll throw out. And why? Because that's not our what we're accustomed to. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful that according to our nature, we're not just, you know, taking these things. So, but the point is, just like in the cooking, it's not the pots, it's the cooking. But you're doing it with the pots. So depending on your situation, then whatever ashram you're in, whatever varna you're in, you're using that to please Krishna. And by that, you're crossing over the material ocean. So doing those activities to please Krishna, exclusively, that's sannyas. So that's the actual point. So, but it's not the sannyas, it's that it's being done to please Krishna. That you're giving up Maya is not the main point. That you're doing it, you're attached to Krishna. That's the main point. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Avadhuta Brahman answers this question from verse 32 in this chapter through the final verse in chapter 9. Okay, so it looks like that's the... Okay, so then we have a story in a story. Because the next one, he answers that through 9, but then you're going to have the story of Pingala in between. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 7th chapter, desiring to give Uddhava jnana and vairagya, Krishna speaks of the various gurus starting with the earth mentioned by the Avadhut. Sardartha Darshani 11.7.1. As described in this chapter, the Supreme Lord Krishna replied to Uddhava's powerful, prayerful entreaty that he be allowed to return with him to his abode. Krishna advised Uddhava to take to the renounced order of sannyas. And when Uddhava showed interest in more elaborate instructions, the Lord further described the Avadhuta's account of his 28 spiritual masters. Right? Not going to beat that one. Right? After hearing Uddhava's prayerful request to be taken back with him... Oh, we just read that.
No, you haven't read.
Oh, this is a request. The previous one was an entreaty. Okay. After hearing Uddhava's prayerful request to be taken back with him to the spiritual world, Lord Krishna informed that he was indeed desirous of returning to his own personal abode, because the purpose of his descent had been successfully fulfilled, and the misfortunes of Kali Yuga would soon beset the earth. Thus he advised Uddhava to take up sannyas by fixing his mind upon him and establishing himself in theoretical and realized transcendental knowledge. Right? So if you're established even in theoretical, you practice it. That's the point. Is that what you understand, that's what you practice. Then when you realize that, now you value the practice. Right? So jnan means you're doing it because it's knowledge. You have the intelligence. But vijnan, you're doing it because you want to. Right? But when you don't want to do something you should, then you start with the jnan part. Does that make sense? The theoretical. The Lord further instructed Uddhava that while remaining untouched by contamination and compassionately disposed to all beings, he should begin wandering throughout this temporary world, which is simply the combined manifestation of the Lord's illusory energy and the imagination of the living entities. Right? So you have the existence of the material nature, and it's transforming and doing what it does. But then you have the illusion that's there, produced by Maya, that this is something special, and it can be very nice, and it takes on the forms that the living entities are interested in, right? So, but at the same time, as the living entities have the imagination that this will make me happy, and this will happen, and from that will happen, and then people are always disappointed because it never quite is as good as imagination, right? That's why you see in the previous older writers, you know, of poetry and drama and this, they would describe something so that you would imagine it, and it's going to be so much better than if you try to actually physically present it. Does that make sense? Right, because even you can physically present it nicely, it's just mechanically presented, but it won't have the flavor and experience of what you've gained from when your mind is producing this. Does that make sense? So that's all it is, you know, everybody's trying to write their own screenplay here, and hoping that everybody else will go according to their direction, which unfortunately they don't seem to understand. Right? Uddhava states, so that combination of the living entity's imagination and then the illusory energy presenting things as if it's in line with the imagination. Right? Uddhava then stated that renouncing material things in a spirit of detachment is the source of the highest auspiciousness. But such renunciation is certainly extremely difficult to accomplish for living entities other than the devotees of the Supreme Lord, because they are very attached to sense gratification. Right? So these other living entities, because they're attached to sense gratification, how do they give up? How are they renounced? So it's a very difficult path. But for devotees, because they're attached to Krishna, then you naturally give up sense gratification. So for devotees, it's easy. Does that make sense? Uddhava expressed the need for some instruction by which foolish persons who misidentify the body as the self can be convinced to carry out their duties in accordance with the order of the Supreme Lord. Right? Because otherwise, you will make your imagination, imaginary plan according to your idea, not according to what is Krishna's idea.
What? But we can say that we can switch our mind according to Krishna's ideas and still daydream about it.
Yeah, but then it's about Krishna, so then
that's beneficial anyway.
Yeah, because then you're meditating on the service, on Krishna, and that, and so. So, we see is that the living entities are doing what's natural for them, they're just doing it in an unnatural, context. The natural context is using the body, mind, and words in connection with Krishna. And so the unnatural context is use it separate from Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what causes all the problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's just like, let's say, the children, you know, in their playing, then they have a whole, they cook and eat a whole meal. Right? So do they have fun? Does it actually get rid of hunger? No. So that's the point, is living entities are, in their imagination, they're going through all these things that they think will make them happy. And they're doing so many things, but it can't actually make them happy because it's not feeding the soul. Even demigods like even demigods like Brahma are not completely surrendered to the Lord, but Uddhava declared that he himself had taken shelter of the only true instructor of the absolute truth, Lord Narayana, the all-perfect, all-knowing master of Vaikuntha, and the only real friend of all living entities. Because he's the only real friend, because whoever you say, from one side, whoever you say is your friends. The point is what we call the friend, technically what we know the interaction is the gross and subtle body. It means there's a soul there, so definitely there's something, but the particular qualities that we have, the uniqueness that's there, that's all coming from the gross and subtle body. Where does that potency for that to come from, since the body's dead matter? That comes from the universal form. Universal form is Krishna's manifestation of all these different things and his entering into them and controlling them. So in other words, that friend, that's actually Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And real friend is means because he's there, he's always like that. He's always in that position. While your friend's here, even you go to the spiritual world and you're with the same souls, the forms that'll be there will be different. Then they'll become real friends. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the soul is a part, the body's not, but that's the part we're identifying as the friend.
Because so, that is what we have, gross and subtle, too.
Yes.
So now, this means that there's a need to develop the equanimity about every living entity.
Yes, yes. Because then you deal with them appropriately. They're all servants of Krishna, but depending on the situation and how they're dealing and what's appropriate, that's how you reciprocate with each one. But, see, the equalness is that you see them all in connection with Krishna, and you see them all as... and you see them all that you're going to deal with them according to what's appropriate. That's the equality. It's not that you deal with everybody the same. Does that make sense? That's the weakness in the modern political context of equality, is that everybody gets exactly the same treatment, the same facility, the same volume, the same everything, but that's not equal, because what will you choose? Just like if we're saying, okay, lunch, what do we choose? How many chapatis? Right? So if you choose 4 chapatis, for some people that's too much, and for some people that's too little. You know, and there'll be some people it's the right amount. So it's not actually equal. Equal is the person who's, for them, 2 chapatis is enough, they get 2. The person who's 4, he gets 4. The person who's 10 gets 10. That's equal. So that's the problem in these political contexts. They're not actually dealing with the nature that's there. There's just this ideal that, oh, everybody should get the same. But it's basically in facility, the economic concept. But if we do that, let's say, we'll say equality. Everyone should get the same treatment and everything. But let's take that over to, you know, some place, and they don't do it anymore. But China, if you go back some years, they did. Everyone got exactly the same kind of places, the same everything. Even the clothes were the same. In fact, the same size. Like someone told me, size 36, that's all they had. You know, so if you were size 20, roll up the sleeves, you know, like that. And if you were bigger than that, then they had size 42, like that. So if you were 37, you're really in trouble. Yeah. So, but at the same time, is that'll be criticized by the people who say, no, no, we should be equal to everyone and all that, you know, because this is just controlled by the government and all. Who's going to make that equality? Who's going to make such an unnatural equality if the government doesn't do it? Right? Because the people won't do it, because who wants to everybody wear the same exact color? It's the same color. Everything was gray. The pants and the shirt, all gray. All the same size, everyone wore the same thing.
How long did it last?
I'm not sure, but it was for some time. Huh?
like
how? Yeah, yeah. Do you ever notice the older pictures where they're wearing that suit and that thing? Do you ever notice that the sleeves are really rolled up in the pants? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why. But, you know, they make it into a fashion, but... So at the same time as the people who claim that they want this liberty, they'll say this is too far, but the only way you'll get that is if the government does it. Right? Because individuals are individual. There's no such thing as exactly the same. So people will speak all these things, but they really don't want it. All they want is nobody has more than me. That's the bottom line. Or, you know, if people, or if you're worried about the other side, you're not as envious of the guys up. Everyone below me should have as much as me. But the problem is, where is that going to come from? They're not producing it. Right? So then, the people who produce it are the ones who are willing to go out and make money. But they're making money because they want to make money. They're not making money because they just think they should do it for everybody. So how are you going to get their money? Right? They'll give some in charity, but they won't give all their money. So only unless the government takes it, then you have the money. But then the problem is if you take their money, they're not going to make any more money. So now what happens? The whole thing falls apart. You know what I'm saying? So all these things are very, very artificial. So the point is the equality means that you see everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. And so you see them in a favorable way, but what's appropriate in dealing for them in their situation that you're in, and you, who you are, you know, your situation, then you'll deal accordingly. Does that make sense? So otherwise, you know, is that okay with the kids? Oh, so cute, you know, like that. So now do we do that with everybody? You know, you come in, I'd like to meet, you know, this guy, he's the CEO of the company. Oh, so cute, you know, like that. No, that's not going to work. So that's the whole point, is it's just talk. It's an idea, okay, people should not be badly behaved, but they're not accepting individuality, though they're all talking about the individual. You see the contradictions here? But not being the Supreme Lord, they cannot reconcile these contradictions. These contradictions will destroy their philosophy and anybody who follows it, because it's untenable. It's unsustainable. Right? But Krishna, having all these contradictory qualities, they all match perfectly. So you're seeing everyone as equal, but you're dealing individually. That you can only get with these directions that Krishna is giving. Yeah. Hearing this, the Supreme Lord replied that actually the jiva soul is his own guru. Within his human body, the living being can search out the Supreme Lord by positive and negative means and ultimately achieve him. For this reason, the human form of life is most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because then you can try to appreciate Krishna. In this regard, Lord Krishna began to describe an ancient conversation between a Brahmana, Avadhuta, and the great king, Yadu. The son of Yayati, Maharaj Yadu, once encountered an Avadhuta who was traveling about here and there in great transcendental ecstasy and was acting unpredictably, just like someone who has become haunted by a ghost. The king inquired from the holy man about the cause of his wandering and his ecstatic condition, and the Avadhut replied that he had received various instructions from 24 different gurus, the earth, the wind, the sky, the water, fire, and so on. Because of the knowledge he had gained from them, he was able to travel about the earth in a liberated state. From the earth he had learned how to be sober, and from the two manifestations of earth, namely the mountain and the tree, he had learned respectively how to serve others and how to dedicate one's whole life to the benefit of others. From the wind, manifesting in the form of vital air within the body, he had learned how to be satisfied with merely keeping oneself alive. And from the external wind, he had learned how to remain uncontaminated by the body and objects of the senses. From the sky he had learned how the soul, which pervades all material substances, is both indivisible and imperceptible. And from the water he had learned how to be naturally clear and purifying. From the fire he had learned how to devour all things without becoming dirtied, and how to destroy all the inauspicious desires of those who make offerings to him. He had also learned from fire how the spirit soul enters into every body and gives illumination, and how the birth and death of those who are embodied cannot be discerned. From the moon he had learned how the material body undergoes growth and dwindling. From the sun he had learned how to avoid entanglement even while coming into contact with sense objects. And he had also learned about the two different modes of perception based on seeing the real form of the soul and seeing false designative coverings. Right, so you have to be able to see both of them if you want to interact. Right? From the pigeon he had learned how too much affection and excessive attachment are not good for one. This human body is the open door to liberation. But if one becomes attached to family life like the pigeon, one is compared to a person who has climbed up to a high place just to fall down again. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 24. Krishna instructs Uddhava to leave the world behind. Verses 25 to 51. The elemental gurus. Verses 52 to 74. The story of the pigeons. Verses 1 to 24. Krishna instructs Uddhava to leave the world behind. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O greatly fortunate Uddhava, you have accurately revealed my desire to withdraw the Yadu dynasty from the earth and return to my own abode in Vaikuntha. Thus Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and all other planetary rulers are now praying for me to resume my residence in Vaikuntha. Answering the prayer of Lord Brahma, I descended within this world along with my planetary portion, Lord Baladev, and performed various activities on behalf of the demigods. I have now completed my mission here. Now, due to the Brahmana's curse, the Yadu dynasty will certainly perish by fighting among themselves. And on the seventh day from today, the ocean will rise up and inundate this city of Dwarka. O saintly Uddhava, in the near future I will abandon this earth. Then, being overwhelmed by the age of Kali, the earth will be bereft of all piety. My dear Uddhava, you should not remain here on the earth once I have abandoned this world. My dear devotee, you are sinless, but in Kali Yuga the people will be addicted to all kinds, types of sinful activities. Therefore, do not stay here. Now you should completely give up all attachment to your personal friends and relatives and fix your mind on me. Thus, being always conscious of me, you should observe all things with equal vision and wander throughout the earth." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Lord thought within himself, "I have fulfilled the desires of my devotees on earth who desired to see me by going to places like Indraprastha and Mithila and thus killing Bana and other demons, marrying Rukmini and meeting friends. I have shown myself to those on lower planets, such as Bali and Yamaraj, when I went there to retrieve the six sons of my guru. I have shown myself to Aditi and Kasyapa and Swarga, when I stole the Parijata tree, and to Mahavishnu and others in Vaikuntha, when I went there to retrieve the sons of the Brahmana. But I have not fulfilled the longing of the great sages of Bhadarikashram, such as Nara Narayana. And now the limit of my 125 years of manifested pastimes has expired. I should send Uddhava to Bhadarik Ashram, since he's equal to me, and it's another form of myself." Because right? That was the idea, is that he would go, but since his time is up, then he'll send Uddhava. I mean, of course, it's his desire, how he wants it.
So Maharaj, it is the same for personality like Krishna to go himself to send someone?
Yes, that's what he said, because he's another form of myself. So the devotee is also a form of the Lord.
So we can say in that option that Guru and Krishna are the same.
Yes. But also it says that's their Guru and Krishna, but also just the Lord's associates are same. Otherwise, how do they interact? You can't be friendly with someone who doesn't have similar qualities. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So. Therefore, Uddhava means when he first went to Vrindavan, they all thought at first he was Krishna. Yes. And then when they checked a little closer, then they saw he's not Krishna.
Yes. Yeah.
And now I should send Uddhava to Bhadrik Ashram, since he is equal to me and is another form of myself. I will give him bhakti yoga, like a valuable jewel, as a gift, along with jnana and vairagya, which are expressed by the term bhaga in my name, Bhagavan. Then their desires will be satisfied. Though Uddhava already has jnana and vairagya arising from his full prema for me, and has and has no desire at the moment for separate teachings of Jnana and Vairagya taught by me. I have produced a desire in him for this, since this is my desire. Though he should actually die in sudden separation, although he should actually die in sudden separation from me, I have preserved his life by my strong Ichha Shakti and send him to that far off place. I will then establish him by my side, invisible to the material eye. Considering in this way, the Lord then imparted the desire for bhakti yoga, along with jnana and vairagya in the heart of Uddhava. Quote, there are two types of affection for relatives and friends. One is affection for them based on one's body, and the other is affection for them based on their relationship with me. It is possible to give up the first, and I will arrange that, but the second cannot be given up. It is impossible for you to do so, and you will not be criticized. Uddhava understood the Lord's intention. Right, so, means relatives and friends, if you see the connection to Krishna, how they're serving Krishna and all that, then that's that connection is all right. But if it's just because of the bodily connection, then that's going to be a problem, because that'll be lost. But the other one, that won't be lost. Because then in service to the Lord, then they're always there.
So Maharaj, when some devotees say, well, these are not actually my family members, they're devotees, I see them in this way.
Yeah. So means it is correct, but at the same time, is by etiquette, you'll deal with them according to what particular position they are in the family. That will be there. So it's, in other words, it's you're giving up that attachment, but you're not, it's not an excuse for being uncultured. Does that make sense? Yeah. But, yeah. But it's just a matter of how much devoted, how much that, that's then how much interaction, how much is there. So. Sri Krishna continued, my dear Uddhava, the material universe that you perceive through your mind, speech, eyes, ears, and other senses is an illusory creation that one imagines to be real due to the influence of Maya. In fact, you should know that all of the objects of the material senses are temporary. So that's why it's not real, because anything temporary is not real. It exists. It may be a fact, but it's not real, because this, for the soul who's eternal, Krishna is eternal. Therefore, only those things that are eternal, then that has meaning. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if one says, no, but the material energy itself is eternal, but then when you bring up the material energy being eternal, then what do you have to, what context do you have to put that in? Just on her own, she's eternal?
No, it's part of Yoga Maya.
It's part of Yoga Maya, so it's part of Krishna. She's the energy of Krishna. So when you go into that, then it's the same point. It's connected to Krishna. So, make sense? So that's the part that's real. Right? But the part that what we see here is something that's, you know, nice and enjoyable and all that, that's illusion. One whose conscience is bewildered by illusion perceives many differences in value and meaning amongst material objects. Thus one engages constantly on the platform of material good and evil and is bound by such conceptions. Like, because you say this is good, this is not, and so then one becomes bound by these kind of aspects of good and evil. And then because of that, then you get absorbed or entangled or distracted. Right? So in other words, what's good for Krishna, that's good. What's not good for Krishna, that's not good. But otherwise, we're saying here, we develop these values, differences in values of material things by their own material qualification. Absorbed in material duality, such a person contemplates the performance of compulsory duties, non-performance of such duties, and performance of forbidden activities. Footnote 1. This topic was recently discussed by Sri Abhihotra in the third chapter of this canto, right? Because that's what you have to know. Is if, okay, what is my conditioning? What's the environment I'm in? Therefore, what are my duties? Compulsory. What are non-performance? And what is opposed to those duties? Mm-hmm. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates.
It's about the value system. This means that we need to accept Krishna's value.
Yes.
And follow.
Yes.
We need to change our value system.
Yes. Yes. Because these Krishna's value system is defined in the scriptures and given by the Acharyas. But it's not because it's written in the scriptures and given by the Acharyas, the facts of it, that's not actually the main point. That one is trying to please Krishna through trying to fulfill his desires. That's the actual point. Because otherwise, you have those that are conscious of Krishna and are willing to follow all the rules and regulations to please Krishna, but it's not for bhakti. Right? They're just very pious living entities who accept the position of Vishnu and therefore are willing to perform their karma and jnana for his pleasure so that they can get the particular result they want. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not just about what's written in the scriptures, but it's also not about ignoring them. Because we're supposed to please Krishna. How do we know what pleases Krishna? That's what's given in Shastra, Guru Sadhana and Shastra. Right? But the Shastra on its own, without the connection to Krishna and that bhakti, then we won't actually get the benefit. Because it's Krishna's world. And so by performing things in the world without understanding him, then how are you going to get any benefit? Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. Yeah. So you'll get material benefit by being pious, but you won't get spiritual benefit. So it's only when you see a connection with him as a person, and you're trying to do it to please him, then you'll actually get transcendental benefit. Otherwise, you can get material and spiritual benefit by doing things within the world according to Shastra. Yes. But you'll stay within the context of the Mahatattva. You won't get out of the Mahatattva. Right? Because we have to remember, the Mahatattva is also Brahman. Right? So, yeah. But when you see it in context of Krishna, the person,
yes,
that's what will take you out of this material world and beyond to the spiritual world. So then, that will bring you to the transcendental position. Does that make sense?
Can you say that value and consciousness are similar?
Yeah. You're conscious of your values. You're not conscious of what's not your values. Right? Like that, even if you see something as, oh, I don't like that, but the point is, it's in the context of your value. It's either favorable to your value or not favorable to your value, but it's all going to come back to your value. Right? It's just like, let's say we take a bunch of, you know, 6, 7, 8 year olds, give them a ball, you know, like a soccer ball, like that, or, you know, you kick around and all that, and let them loose in the Louvre. Where are they going to go? What are they going to look for? They're going to say, oh, I want to play footy in front of, you know, Mona Lisa. No, yeah, nothing. You know, we got to get fired up. We're going to do it in front of Van Gogh. You know, like that. No, they're not going to do it. They're going to look for wherever the biggest space is that they can run around and you know, not be bothered. So they'll only see in their context. Does that make sense? That's it. You know, let's say some guy is, you know, homeless and has no place to sleep. And he somehow or another gets in there at night, where's he going to look for? A good place to sleep. You know what I'm saying? You know, you let a dog in there, it'll go around, sniff around, to, how you say, sanctify a few vertical items, claiming them as his own, and then he'll walk out. There's nothing to eat, there's no other dogs. You know, unless he finds the picture of dog's dinner or something like that, you know. But otherwise, no. He's just going to go. You know, so that's the whole thing, is people will go there for their own purposes, right? You know, a pickpocket will just look for who they can pickpocket. They won't be worried about the art. They know that most people stand over in this place, so they'll be going over there. You know, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that everyone sees according to their values. And if it's outside your value, you do not see it. Literally. So that's why he says, it's your imagination. You see what you want to see. Maya has all these things here, and certain people see certain things, and that's it. Right? They don't see beyond. So that's why then Krishna says in the second verse of the Chaturshloki that whatever is of value to you, if you see it in connection with Krishna, it's real, and if you don't, it's illusion. So the value itself doesn't actually have a value other than its value to connect to Krishna. In other words, so one may ask, well, what do I connect to Krishna? What do you value? Your values are what you connect. And then, how do you connect them? That's what Shastra will tell you. Because otherwise, then, you know, do all kinds of weirdo things too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse, 8, explains the previous verse, 7. There are various meanings endowed with good or bad qualities. An ignorant person, ayuktasya, perceives erroneously. For persons who have fallen into the current of the gunas, what is a good quality and what is a bad quality? What is a good object or a bad object? Right? It's going to be according to the modes that they're under. Right? Because they see perceive erroneously. So what is there, they'll see it according to their value. Now, what the Shastra says, how that should be used and perceived, it may be not in line with that. Yeah. Are not good and bad expressed in the Vedas by injunctions and prohibitions? Yes. But even the Vedas speak of this subject for the ignorant. Karma is prescribed actions. Akarma is neglect of those actions. Vikarma is prohibited action. These differences belong to a person who thinks in terms of good and bad, a person in ignorance. Footnote 2. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and that is bad is all a mistake. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 4:176. Right? Because the point is how does it connect to Krishna? How is it recommended? Is this how Krishna wants to be served? That makes it good. And if it's not that, then it's bad. In this regard, Sri Krishna instructed Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita 4:17. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. Right? Then you actually know what is there. So you have, means the akarma neglected those actions. So you have prescribed duties, but they're neglected. Means you're just doing things to please Krishna. So that's one definition of akarma. The other, for the materialist, is he's not performing a duty he should do. He's not doing anything wrong, but he's not doing what he should do. So that's improper. But for the devotee, he's not engaged in material activity. So if it's not a service to Krishna, he's not engaged in it. That's akarma. He's not involved in karma. There's no reaction. But for the other one, there'll be a reaction. It'll pollute the consciousness. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. If one is serious about liberation from material bondage, one has to understand the distinctions between action, inaction, and unauthorized action. One has to apply oneself to such an analysis of action, reaction, and perverted reactions, because it is a very difficult subject matter. To understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its modes, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. In other words, one who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servant of the Lord, and that, consequently, one has to act in Krishna consciousness. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed towards this conclusion. Right? That everyone is a servant of Krishna, and one should act in that capacity. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are vikarmas, or prohibited actions. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secret from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Right? So we saw before, that's the whole point of Uddhava going to Bhadarikashram with this understanding. Then it's the same as Krishna going. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be bewildered. Right? Because you can't tell, because as soon as you get into detail, then you get bewildered. Because one aspect you like, another aspect you don't. And so then it becomes bewildered, because the ones you like, then should be things you do, things you don't like, then there's things you shouldn't do. like that. So they won't know. It has to be based on what is actually service to Krishna. Right? So that is actual what you should be done. And then what's against that, that's vikarma. Krishna continued. Therefore, bringing all your senses under control and thus subduing the mind, you should see the entire world as the object of enjoyment for the jivas, expanded everywhere. And you should also see the jivas as controlled by me, Paramatma. Being fully endowed with the conclusion of the Vedas and its realization, satisfied by realization of Atma, being the object of affection by all beings, you will not be checked by any obstacles. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Right, so the object of enjoyment means the entire world is the object of enjoyment for the jivas. Right, because that's what they're here for. They're seeing everything as it's for their enjoyment. So whatever's going on, if they're working on it, they're trying to develop it, it's for their enjoyment. Right? So unless it's the devotee, then they are seeing how to do these things in Krishna's service. Right? That's the... Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. If one controls the mind and neglects to perform karmas, the devatas will create obstacles. End quote. Being fixed in understanding the real meaning of the Vedas, jnana, and in realization of that meaning, vijnana, consequently being satisfied in your mind by realization of Atma, and thus being the object of affection, Atma Bhutaha, of all beings, you will not be checked by obstacles. Shruti says, Tasya hana devas cha na bhutya ishate atma yevaisham sa bhavati. The devas do not create obstacles for the person who has realized Atma. Read Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10. Because that's what the whole purpose of the world is for. They're managing, see, it goes on nicely, and because according to your karmas, you get whatever you're looking for. So, if you're involved in the field of karma, but don't do an action, then the devatas will create obstacles because you're supposed to perform action. Right? That's what's prescribed. But if you realize the soul and are therefore not acting, but only acting on the transcendental platform, the devatas will not create any obstacles for such a person. Because that's actually what the material world's for. You understand? So you see here the study in these two kinds of akarma. For the one, you'll get obstacles because it's displeasing. It's not what you're supposed to... It's not what you... means. Yeah, you're supposed to be doing something, not doing something. No, not... You shouldn't be not doing something. Because otherwise, colloquially, we'll say not doing something. Not doing something means you're doing something. But...
Prabhupada says, one should never be attached to not doing...
Yes.
Maharaj says that point,
means if there's something, so duty you're supposed to do, you don't do it, there'll be obstacles will come about because of that. Right? You have a duty, you're supposed to take out the garbage. You don't take out the garbage, you avoid that duty. Obstacles don't come? You get a fragrance in the house that may not be appreciated. Then you get, you know, loud, sharp, very quickly spoken syllables by certain members of the household. And, you know, other living entities that you weren't actually planning to invite into your house, then they all start coming. You know, a lot happens. Does that make sense?
That means you have to do the duty.
You have to do the duty. But the point is one will still be bound though you're doing the duties. So we take out the garbage for Krishna, because Krishna wants the place to be clean. That's why we take out the garbage. You know, we don't take out the garbage because otherwise our wife will yell at us. We take out the garbage because it pleases Krishna. Then there'll be no obstacles. Does that make sense? Sri Krishna continued. One who has transcended material good and evil automatically acts in accordance with the religious injunctions and avoids forbidden activities. It's automatic. Because the point is non-action in Krishna consciousness means only doing things for Krishna, so it's not a material action. So therefore, you avoid, you know, doing karma that just gets material benefit, or doing vikarma that gets, you know, material problems. You're only doing Krishna consciousness, so it solves both of them. So others, then they work very hard in trying to understand. You just, it's simple, you do it to please Krishna. So that means all the religious injunctions and forbidden activity and avoiding forbidden activities is already being done. Because whatever is forbidden, that's not what you offer to Krishna. Whatever is recommended in the religious injunctions, that's what you offer to Krishna. But the point is it's offering to Krishna that's important. So, the self-realized person does this spontaneously, like an innocent child, and not because he is thinking in terms of material good and evil. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "One who has attained jnana acts as he pleases. The jnani who has surpassed thinking in terms of good and bad refrains from forbidden acts arising from previous impressions of that nature, but without condemning such forbidden acts as bad." Right, so it's not that the act is bad, it's not doing things to please Krishna is bad. That's why then someone's doing something wrong, it's a matter of, no, doing what's proper in Krishna consciousness. That's all you have to correct. That's why in the Vaishnav philosophy, and actually technically in the Vedic, there is no prayaschitta. Yeah. It's just performing what you're supposed to do in Krishna consciousness. Because just as the forbidden act doesn't give any benefit, performing an atonement for that also doesn't give any spiritual benefit. Right? The pious act won't give you spiritual benefit, the impious won't give you, and an atonement for an impious won't give you spiritual. So since the purpose is spiritual, when the soul just gives up the material and engages in spiritual, what's the need of atonement? That's the whole point.
How can we check the intent?
See the symptoms, see what goes. If you're not sure, just you monitor it, you see what happens. You know, if you don't know what it is, you know, you deal with it and then you'll see when it sprouts. What does it turn into? And if it starts eating your couch, then you know that it belongs outside.
Because to everything is connected to the change of consciousness.
Yes.
And how can we evaluate?
The point is discuss about Krishna consciousness. Yes. You know, so that context, people do they understand and this and that. That's the aspect. Because the right and wrong activities, unless they're seen in connection with how it is in how it serves Krishna, then what's the real point?
Yes.
We just described so-called proper action, but it's not connected to Krishna. What have we actually described?
Yes.
Right? Like that. Or avoiding, you know, improper action. But unless there's a reason for that, because it's connected to Krishna. So generally you can always see whatever's recommended has a connection to Krishna. What's not recommended doesn't. Right? And even what's recommended, we saw in previous descriptions that the Vedas will include everybody in that, so that everybody fits into the principles of the Vedic lifestyle. The principles everybody follows, but the detail depends upon what modes you're in. And so then people may get down to, you know, very kind of base kind of aspects of lifestyle, but it'll be based on scripture, because they accept scripture, they accept guru, they accept regulation, like that. You know, so these things are important. So they're accepting. Then by following that, then we get some good association, then they might come up. But the lifestyle is all, the principle of the lifestyle is the same. Detail may change. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then, even though these may be mentioned in certain aspects of the scripture, it's not meant for, that's not actually the purpose of those scriptures. The purpose of the scripture is to elevate you to God consciousness. So these keep you from getting too much entangled. You're attached to Maya, you're an illusion, but it regulates it so it's not so bad.
Yes.
Then the idea is then if you do come in contact with someone who can explain it properly, then you'll see what is the correct thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So the scriptures were also mentioned, what are the essential points within all of its recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So then that brings it up to then those are the ones that are given to us. So we can't just go to anything and say it's there. We have to see what's recommended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. What's the purpose? What those things that are valuable or supportive of bhakti, that's what's used, or at least neutral. Right, we won't use things that are not favorable towards, but not unrecommended. Does that make sense? Just like there's those things that are directly bhakti. There's those things that are supportive, secondary items that are supportive of that direct bhakti. Then there's those things that are neutral. They can be used for bhakti or for maya or anything, but they're neutral. They're basic things that you always use, like washing pots. You know, like that. It's a neutral thing. Like that. Does that make sense? It can be used either way. Now, if you're in the Krishna's deity kitchen washing the pots, now it's supportive of the service of cooking. Right? You know, so then it becomes useful there. But then you have activities that may be recommended in the Vedas, but they're not recommended for us. You know, say, like, let's say practices of another sampradaya. That's recommended for them. They should follow that. That's for them. That's the, you know, direct, how you say, direct, indirect, and neutral aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, that would be not in line with what we would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally it's not the externalist as much as it's the mentality or meditation and stuff like this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then the fifth stage is those things that are against the, you know, the Vedic version.
Okay.
You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So those five things are there. So one has to see what's what. So we get that from the acharyas they give us. You know, like taking our bath. That's one of the neutral ones. But we use it for taking a bath to go to the temple and associate with devotees and do worship. So then it becomes connected. Is that? Yeah. But like worship of demigods, we don't do, even though it's mentioned in scriptures, but it's not our process. It's not our recommendation.
For the practice of bhakti, whatever actions we perform, can we say that they are in action? Because
can we say whatever we do in devotional service is in action? Yes.
Yeah.
If it's done for Krishna, yes.
So whether there's a conscious effort or not?
Whether it's sometimes a conscious effort or not. Means if it's under authority, then you get the benefit. If you're more conscious, you get more benefit. Does that make sense? It's just like all the ducks are there. They're all going to get fed. But the one who quacks more gets more. That's all. Okay. Sri Krishna concluded, "One who is the kind well-wisher of all living beings, who is peaceful and firmly fixed in knowledge and realization, sees me within all things. Such a person never again falls down into the cycle of birth and death." Because if Krishna is in everything, you're going to see everything in relationship to Krishna. So that's the point. For the devotee, it's easy. Right? They're peaceful because there's no material desire. Right? They're firmly fixed in knowledge and realization because it's always about Krishna. Right? It's a well-wisher of all living beings as he sees super soul with everyone. Sri Krishna says in Gita, "Having attained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine." Bhagavad Gita 4:53. 4:35. Okay. "One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me.
We see that he read lots of quotes from Gita, because this is Uddhava Gita means just based on Bhagavad Gita.
Means Gita is basically, it appears that Gita is a specific body of knowledge. And so depending on who you're explaining it to, then you're using different stories and this and that, or different, you know, references like that. But the points, the philosophical points, will all be the same. It's just now this is the 11th canto, we'll see that certain aspects will go technically deeper. Right? So then you know, it would be just like the last chapters of Bhagavad Gita are more technical than the first parts. But that's once you've understood about Krishna. So you have the first six cantos, then it's about Krishna, then you have the last. So you have the first nine cantos, then you have the 10th canto about Krishna, and then you have now the technical details. If that makes sense. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Bhagavad Gita 6:30. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, thus instructed his pure devotee Uddhava, who was eager to receive knowledge from the Lord. Uddhava then offered obeisance to the Lord and spoke as follows. Sri Uddhava said, My dear Lord, you alone award the results of yoga practice, and you are so kind that by your influence you distribute the perfection of yoga to your devotee. Thus you are the supreme soul who is realized through yoga, and it is you who are the origin of all mystic power. For my supreme benefit, you have explained the procedure for giving up the material world to the process of sannyas, or renunciation. Right? So this sannyas, then we see, is that you're giving up everything and it's just being done for Krishna. So that's the whole purpose of sannyas. So we see is the devotees are therefore naturally just part of this. Right? Because they have that knowledge and detachment. So they know Krishna and they're detached from the material involvement.
So Maharaj, can we say that the stage of sannyas means it's for making the thing clear about that understanding? The official sannyas.
Yes. The point is that if you haven't already done it, now is your last chance.
Yeah.
Like that. And so then it's also made more obvious, because of that, it has the external aspects that one has to be more careful.
Yes.
But you see, the whole point is that if you're Krishna conscious, that's sannyas.
Yes.
So technically, those who aren't Krishna conscious, but they're very renounced, are just that. They're renounced.
Yes.
They're technically not sannyas by consciousness, because they're giving up all these material things, but they want liberation. So then it's not for Krishna. They may not be involved in the material world, but it's still not for Krishna. So then that aspect of akarma then will keep them in the material world. Right? So only the spiritual akarma will take you out, is bhakti. But the material will keep you in the material world. So if you're supposed to do karma and you don't, then you'll stay within that cycle of karma. But if you're renounced and therefore not doing all these karmas, but you're not doing it for Krishna, then you may get out of this specific universe, but you won't get out of the Mahatattva. And then next universe, or you know, however many universes it takes you, you know, because one set of universe is 3/4 of a second, so you know, even if it's 5 minutes, you're going, wow, this is fabulous. Guaranteed by 10 minutes you'll be bored. Right? You know, so that's a lot of, how you say? You know, so like 20 you know, breaths of Mahavishnu or something, and then you're back in. But now it's a blade of grass or a rock. Oh. My dear Lord, O Supreme Soul, for those whose minds are attached to sense gratification, and especially for those bereft of devotion unto you, such a renunciation of material enjoyment is most difficult to perform. That is my opinion. O my Lord, I myself am foolish because my consciousness is merged in the material body and bodily relations. So these great souls, they can have an opinion, because it's all about Krishna. But for us, then we just follow what the acharyas say. Right? Like that. You know, we have our personal conviction. Okay. Oh my Lord, I myself am most foolish because my consciousness is merged in the material body and bodily relations, which are all manufactured by your illusory energy. Thus I am thinking, I am this body, and all of these relatives are mine. Therefore, my Lord, please instruct your poor servant. Please tell me how I can very easily carry out your instructions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, right? Why would it be difficult? Right, because we think no, it should be a very difficult process. But just as we said, even once engaged in improper activities, all you have to do is change the consciousness and start doing proper activities. It means serve Krishna. That's all that's necessary. So therefore, the process also is that simple. Does that make sense? For someone who's a materialist, not connecting things to Krishna, there's reactions for their inaction or their improper action. Right? Because they're thinking this because of my renunciation, that's what's giving me liberation. So then they're bound to the results of their actions. Or inactions or bad, you know, whatever. But for the devotee, because his inaction means he's only doing things for Krishna, not for himself, then they're transcendentally situated. Does that make sense? And being transcendentally situated, then there's no need of prayaschitta. So in the same way, there's no need of a difficult process. You just have to do things in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why it's easy for devotees and very difficult for all these great sages and all these things. Because if it's not being done for Krishna, then it is a very difficult process. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, I am absorbed in material enjoyment because I am deeply involved with sons and wife related to my body created by your maya. I identify with the blind well of the body. Teach me how to give up that absorption and deliver me. Teach me first the actions and then teach about jnana. Sri Uddhava continued, My dear Lord, you are the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, and you reveal yourself to your devotees. Besides your lordship, I do not see anyone who can actually explain perfect knowledge to me. Footnote 3. Arjuna similarly said, This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. Bhagavad Gita 6:39. Such a perfect teacher is not to be found even among the demigods in heaven. So we see there, you know, so many similarities between Gita. Yes. Right. Such a perfect teacher is not to be found even among the demigods in heaven. Indeed, all of the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are bewildered by your illusory potency. They are conditioned souls who accept their own material bodies and bodily expansions to be the highest truth. Therefore, O Lord, feeling weary of material life and tormented by its distress, I now surrender unto you because you are the perfect master. Footnote 4. Arjuna similarly said, Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. For now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. You are the unlimited, all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose spiritual abode in Vaikuntha is free from all disturbances. In fact, you are known as Narayana, the true friend of all living beings. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Therefore, I surrender unto you. Though someone may have all good qualities, he performs bad activities. In order to dispel this doubt about the Lord, Uddhava says that his Lord is irreproachable in conduct. Anavadyam. Some persons may be served, but at the time of giving results, they perish. But you have no limit in time or space, right? So you may serve someone and try to get all the benefits, but in time, then they disappear. And so then do you really get your results? Right? Yeah, so that's the problem. But Krishna, he has no limit in time or space. Some persons do not have complete knowledge, but are omniscient, sarvajnam. Some persons are incapable of giving complete protection, but you give complete protection as the controller of all, Ishwaram. Some persons have inauspicious abodes, but you have an abode, Vaikuntha, which is not worn out by time. O Lord, I have become indifferent to the world because I am afflicted with suffering. You are the supreme shelter of even Nara, the creator of Mahatattva. You are most merciful. You are the friend of all men, Nara Shakyam. You have appeared in the world to give mercy to everyone. The Supreme Lord replied, generally, those human beings who can expertly analyze the actual situation in the material world are able to raise themselves beyond the inauspicious life of gross material gratification. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, O Uddhava, you think you are a fool, but I do not see such intelligence as yours among all the devatas. Though people are fallen, they can know the truth by the strength of their intelligence, even without instructions of a guru. Thus, certainly you, the crest jewel of intelligent people, can know the truth taught by a guru like me. Right? So even someone who is in a fallen condition, using intelligence, they can see what's what, even without a guru instructing. So let alone someone as intelligent as Uddhava and having a guru like Krishna. Yeah. Right? So you're definitely not going to have a problem.
They're a perfect match.
Yes, perfect.
If so Uddhava is presenting like Arjuna, means like a fool, like not knowing. He has the same presentation.
Yes, yes. Well, because that's the whole point. The disciple sees himself as a fool before the spiritual master. That's just the way it is. Because however much you know, they know more. You know, so. Yeah. Being expert at judging the cause of auspicious and inauspiciousness in the world, such persons can deliver themselves from the desire for sense objects. Ashu bhashayat. Sri Krishna continued, an intelligent person, expert in perceiving the world around him and in applying sound logic, can achieve real benefit through his own intelligence. Thus, someone acts as one's own instructing spiritual master. In the human form of life, those who are self-controlled and expert in spiritual science of Shankya can directly see me along with all my potencies. Yeah. So that's the whole point of now we see is we're going to get into this whole explanation of the value of this manana. That we're using our intelligence, we're deliberating on things. The scriptures has already said the point. Now we have to deliberate it in the context of what we're perceiving. Then that gives us a practical point of application. So he says, directly can see me along with all my potencies. Because it's already there. Now you contemplate these things. You apply it into the situations around you. So how to do that? So now that's what we're going to start learning. In this regard, Lord Kapila said, in that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Srimad Bhagavatam 325.18. So, here we're getting all the Gitas now. Right? Sri Krishna continued, in this world there are many kinds of created bodies. Some with one leg, others with two, three, four, or more legs, and still others with no legs. But of all these, the human form is actually dear to me. So you have all these, that's another way to categorize living entities, how many legs they have. Right? Like that. As we saw before, is that one was toenails. You know, like that. So, you know, there's so many ways to categorize. Although I, the Supreme Lord, can never be captured by ordinary sense perception, those situated in human life may use their intelligence and other faculties of perception to directly search for me through both apparent and indirect ascertained symptoms. Footnote 5. A person who is searching for after the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36. Right, so we see is that these four verses of the Chaturshloki, then they're, you know, the basis of all what is being given there. Right? And so we're just expanding out of that. So all the points that are there, then that gives your fundaments of all the philosophy. So what is in the Gita, you don't have more philosophy than that. You can get into more detail within those points, but you won't actually have more philosophy than that. Because when you say the ABCs, it's not that when you get to, you know, middle school, they add in more letters, and then when you go to university, there's more letters, then you do your postgraduate, more letters, when you do your PhD, then they bring in this whole stack of letters. No, there's only the same amount of letters from the first day you go to school to the day that they write on the epitaph on your, you know, that stone that is representing where here lies, you know, whatever it is. You know, how you say, here lies Professor such and such who died under the weight of the burden of so many extra letters. Right, yeah, so. Okay, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Situated in human form, engaging in bhakti yoga, they directly search for me. Right? So they're looking for Krishna. You may be looking through all the various aspects of the creation, which is indirect, but they're looking for Krishna, who's direct. That's the difference. The impersonalist, okay, they know Krishna is everything and all this, but they're not looking for him directly. They leave it on that platform of the universal form. The Hiranyagarbha or the impersonalist. They know that, okay, it's all Brahman, but they don't look for him directly. So that's the difference. So when we've seen what's being given here, the Sarva Kalvidam Brahma, is that it's all Brahman, we're looking for Krishna directly. Right? And then others may use this same philosophy to look less. Does that make sense? So that means the Brajbasis, by understanding this point given by Krishna, then that means everything that they see, everything they value, they always try to see Krishna, the person, directly in connection with it. Right? Does that make sense? This is what separates this point from the impersonalists. They don't look for Krishna directly. They only look for Brahman or Maximum Paramatma. But generally only Brahman. But here you're looking for the person directly.
And now it's the karmi, they look for the energy of Krishna.
They look for the energy and the, so it's the energy of Brahman, so they don't understand it's coming from Brahman. You know. So it follows the laws of nature. So then, you know, the more scientific are willing to accept those laws. Mm-hmm. Like that. So they worship, you know, the energy of Brahman.
Yes.
But they don't attribute it to Brahman. Yes. Like that. So it's a problem. Situated in human form, engaging in bhakti yoga, they directly search for me, Krishna, by causes of bhakti such as hearing and chanting. It is said, bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. I am only attained only by bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. Want to make sure. It's only. I'm only attained. No, you can't even that. Only by bhakti, right? 11.14.21. One may ask, Can they see you be searching for you through inference? since you are the simulator of intelligence. To which the Lord responds, I cannot be attained by inference using the intelligence and various indicators. The dependence of Jiva is... I cannot be attained by inference using the intelligence and various indicators, right? So they have to be looking for Krishna himself and how he's in there and how he's said.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So the inference aspect is not enough. You have to take it back to the Shabda and then from there back to how Krishna is involved. Does that make sense? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.